added those agencies should use all their existing statutory authority to do so. A bill introduced in Olympia would set minimum numbers for nursing staffs in hospitals. Nurses say it's needed to address the crisis of short staffing in hospitals. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Nurses are describing bleak conditions because of understaffing in Washington state hospitals. A bill introduced in Olympia aims to address that. The so-called Safe Staffing Standards legislation would set minimum nurse patient ratios for hospitals. Dana Robinson has been a nurse in hospital settings for 17 years, now working in labor and delivery. She says staffing issues were an issue before the pandemic, but she has never seen burnout as high or morale as low as they are now.
Most of us that are still at the bedside have reached our breaking point already, but we're staying because we care about our patients and our community, and we see that there's nobody else.
A similar measure was introduced in 2022 and passed the House, but failed in the Senate. Hospitals in the state say it creates an unnecessary level of government oversight and that it will be hard to find enough nurses to fill the number of positions needed to stay in line with the bill's requirements. Head of the Washington State Nurses Association, David Keepnews, says the lack of nurses means they struggle to provide the care patients need. He thinks this bill is needed to stop the hemorrhaging within the profession and could even reverse it.
We've heard from many nurses who have left that if conditions were different, especially in terms of adequate staffing, that they would come back to nursing. But we are losing people. We're losing talented, experienced nurses every day.
Washington State already requires staffing committees in hospitals to develop staffing plans. But Robinson and supporters of the Safe Staffing Standards bill say those committees don't have enough teeth to solve this issue.
The most important thing that we can do is have some oversight that helps to ensure safe staffing levels. Because without that, none of the other fixes matter.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The United States endured 18 separate billion-dollar-plus climate or weather-related disasters in 2022, with damages coming to $165 billion. This is according to a new report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. The annual report from NOAA points to a troubling trend. Extreme weather events fueled by climate change are occurring at a higher frequency with increased financial and human costs. Dr. Rick Spinrad, NOAA's administrator, said, quote, "Climate change is creating more and more intense extreme events that cause significant damage and often sets off cascading hazards like intense drought, followed by devastating wildfires, by dangerous flooding and mudslides," end quote. In five of the last 6 years, costs from climate and weather-related disasters have exceeded $100 billion annually. The average number of billion-dollar-plus disasters has risen dramatically over that time as well because of a combination of factors, including more people living in and moving to hazardous areas, increasing hazards like wind speed and fire intensity, and a warming climate. Climate-fueled hurricanes in particular are causing significant damages. Hurricane Ian killed at least 150 people when it made landfall, and that alone cost nearly $113 billion. The rise in extreme weather events goes along with increasing global temperatures. The last 8 years have been the warmest in modern history. Average global temperatures increased by 2.1 degrees Fahrenheit since the Industrial Revolution. That's when humans started their widespread use of fossil fuels. Despite international pledges to move economies to cleaner energy sources, global greenhouse emissions continue to rise. United States emissions rose 1.3% in 2022, which was the second straight year that they went up. This occurred despite the Biden administration's goal of cutting U.S. emissions in half by the year 2030. More extreme weather is expected in 2023. To reduce the threat of deadly and costly weather events, scientists say the world needs to limit warming by urgently cutting climate warming emissions. Some adverse impacts of climate change are already here, and scientists say adaptation efforts are needed as well. Last year, the world's oceans were the hottest ever recorded. More than 90% of the excess heat trapped by greenhouse gas emissions is absorbed in the oceans, so it's a better indicator of the severity of global warming than air temperatures. The oceans absorbed about 10 zeta joules more heat in 2022 than they did in 2021. That's equivalent to every person on Earth running 40 hair dryers all day, every day. 2022 is expected to be the fourth or fifth hottest for surface air temperatures when the final data is processed. Hotter oceans lead to more intense hurricanes and typhoons, and to more moisture in the air, which brings more intense rains and flooding. Warmer water also expands, pushing up sea levels and endangering coastal cities. Statistics also show an increase in ocean stratification, where variations in water density restrict mixing of deeper, cooler, and more nutrient-rich waters with surface waters. Stratification also decreases the water's ability to absorb carbon dioxide. The heating of the oceans and the resulting extreme weather will continue to increase until humanity reaches net zero emissions. Documents found at President Biden's former institute stir political rumblings. Some Democrats fear a new House committee on China could promote further xenophobia, and California Representative Katie Porter runs for Senate. Catherine Carley has more on these stories with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The fact that Joe Biden is in possession of classified documents when he was vice president signals that we need to have a serious investigation into this.
Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia says President Joe Biden should be impeached over the discovery of potentially classified documents in the Washington, D.C. office of his former institute. The House Intelligence Committee has requested intelligence officials conduct a damage assessment of the documents. Speaking from Mexico, Biden said he was surprised to learn of the documents and added his team immediately turned them over to the National Archives.
I am proud that my first vote is to protect small businesses in South Texas from the IRS overreach.
Republicans, including Representative Monica De La Cruz, voted to repeal nearly 90% of new funding for the IRS secured in last year's Inflation Reduction Act. The funds are meant to improve taxpayer assistance and criminal investigations. With bipartisan support, the House also voted to establish a select committee to assess the economic and security challenges posed by China. 65 Democrats, including Representative Hank Johnson of Georgia, opposed the measure.
Why are we creating this committee? I fear that it is to create a platform to unleash anti-Asian hate and division.
The committee is expected to debate the Chinese-owned video sharing app TikTok, which committee chair Republican Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin proposed be banned in the U.S.
Mr. Diamond, you know how to spend $31 million a year in salary, and you can't figure out how to make up a $567 a month shortfall. This budget problem you cannot solve.
Representative Katie Porter of California grilled then Wells Fargo CEO Jamie Dimon over the bank's fake account scandal and became known for strategic use of a simple whiteboard to explain corporate price gouging. Porter has now announced her bid for the U.S. Senate as uncertainty grows on whether 89-year-old Senator Dianne Feinstein will seek a sixth term in 2024. Several House Democrats with military backgrounds say Republican Representative George Santos of New York, who fabricated his perfi, poses a threat to national security and should not have access to sensitive information. House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana says Republicans will handle the matter internally.
So we're going to have to sit down and talk to him about it, and that's something that we're going to deal with, just like there's a lot of other things we're going to deal with.
Finally, former chief financial officer for the organization, Alan Weisselberg, was sentenced to 5 months in jail after serving as a key witness in the criminal tax fraud trial against the former president's business empire. Weisselberg, who agreed to testify against the Trump Organization in return for a shortened sentence, pleaded guilty to 15 counts of tax evasion. I'm Catherine Lee for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
An audit of Oregon's community colleges finds state lawmakers could do more to improve completion rates. The 2023 legislative session began on Monday. Eric Tegedoff has more.
An audit of community colleges in Oregon has implications for the state's legislative session that started this week. The report from the Secretary of State's Audit Division in December points to the need for a greater role from the commission that oversees higher education. Head of the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission, Ben Cannon, says there have been some modest gains in completion or transfer numbers over the past decade. Although overall numbers hover around half, he notes there has been greater success for some underrepresented students of color.
Are graduating more Hispanic Latino students today than at any prior time, and that's in spite of the decline in overall enrollment at the colleges over the last couple of years in particular. That's been steep.
The audit says that enrollment dropped faster than most other states, both before and during the pandemic. In 2021, Oregon ranked 40th for completions, according to data from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center included in the report. Despite the challenges, the audit points to areas where state lawmakers could help Higher Education Coordinating Commission improve outcomes at Oregon's 17 community colleges, including increased funding and collecting more data to measure them.
The increased role that the auditors envision for the HEC in helping improve student success at community colleges would require greater levels of capacity at the state agency at the HEC, or in some cases, greater levels of authority.
Cannon says his agency and the audit agree that state lawmakers can do more to invest in financial aid.
Those programs are a partnership between the HEC and the legislature, and legislative support, particularly on the funding side, is really critical for us to expand those and really meet the spirit of the auditor's recommendation there.
Oregon's legislative session is slated to run through the middle of June. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Adoff.
No commercial flights left the ground this morning. That's because of a problem with one of the Federal Aeronautic Administration's, or FAA's, national data systems. More than 7,000 flights within, into, or out of the United States were delayed. The failure was with the FAA's Notice to Air Mission Alert system, which sends real-time alerts to pilots about the hazards in the air or on the ground. Joe Biden told reporters that they don't know what the cause is. The White House said there was no evidence of a cyber attack, but the causes of the failure would be investigated by the Department of Transportation. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for this newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Keeping Democracy Alive, then at 7, Paradigms. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 42 degrees. Tomorrow, that rain continues with a daytime high of 53. Today in history, in 1964, the Surgeon General of the United States publishes the landmark report, Smoking and Health, report of the Advisory Committee to the Surgeon General of the United States, saying that smoking may be hazardous to health, sparking national and worldwide anti-smoking efforts. The quote of the day is from American singer-songwriter Mary J. Blige, who was born today in 1971. She said, quote, "I know who I am. I'm not perfect. I'm not the most beautiful woman in the world, but I'm one of them." Navajo Nation leaders make history during a ceremony this week. Antonia Gonzalez has that story and more with National Native News.
The leaders of the Navajo Nation took office Tuesday. A ceremony was held in Fort Defiance, Arizona, where Dr. Boo Nigrin was sworn in as president, Rochelle Montoya as vice president, tribal council delegates, and other elected officials. Nigrin, age 36, is the youngest person ever to take the presidency. During his campaign, he focused on being the voice of the people to address many long-standing issues facing the Navajo Nation. In his inauguration speech, Nigrin expressed unity to work with the tribal council and shared many of his campaign promises.
Let's get basic services to the Navajo people. We need water. We need roads. We need broadband. We need better public safety. So as your next Navajo Nation president, I will not hesitate. I'll do whatever it takes to make sure that our people have a chance, our people have an opportunity to make something of themselves.
Nigrin, who was raised single mother and his grandmother, says he appreciates strong women, including seeing a need for female leadership in the Navajo Nation's top office. Rochelle Montoya made history, becoming the first woman ever as vice president. In her inauguration speech, Montoya thanked women of the Navajo Nation, past, present, and future.
We are here today, standing on the shoulders of our ancestors. Gentlemen, give me a few moments to take this moment with my matriarchs, the women of the Navajo Nation, the grandmothers, the grandchildren, mothers, the aunts.
Montoya, who's known for her work as a community leader and advocate for education, encouraged people to continue to speak the Navajo language. She also expressed unity between the executive and legislative branches. 17 of the 24 Navajo delegates are new to the Tribal Council. 9 of the delegates are women. The Navajo Nation is one of the largest tribes in the United States, with the largest reservation located in the Four Corners region. The Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska officially signed a deed to put its first parcel of land into trust. The deed was signed this week by Tlingit and Haida President Richard Peterson at the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Anchorage. Last month, Peterson talked to National Native News about the achievement in the tribe's land back initiative after receiving the announcement in November and then being able to thank President Biden in person and top administration officials for the approval in Washington, D.C. during the White House Tribal Nations Summit.
We got the announcement of getting our fee to trust, and that was pretty historical for Tlingit and Haida, my tribe. And it's only the second land of trust, you know, and since the Obama administration and the first under the Biden. And so it's pretty historical, so we're appreciative of that.
The land is located in Juneau, among things, will help with federal services programs and foster economic development. The parcel will be officially transferred over to the federal government to hold for the benefit of the tribe and its citizens once the deed is recorded. On Tuesday, Congressman Tom Cole was appointed chair of the House Rules Committee by House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Cole served a number of times on the committee, including as a ranking member and as vice chair. Cole, a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation, is the first Oklahoman and first Native American to chair the committee. Every major piece of legislation must be passed through the committee before consideration on the House floor. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Activists in Baltimore are taking on housing injustice with attempts to push back against eminent domain abuse, shedding light on the realities of tax incentives, and taking on the city over residential tax sales. Brett Pivato has more.
Tired of waiting for the city to address housing injustice, grassroots activists in Baltimore are taking action. Activists are taking on housing injustice on multiple fronts with attempts to push back against eminent domain abuse, shedding light on ineffective tax incentives, and confronting the city over residential tax sales. Organizers in Poppleton, a predominantly black neighborhood in West Baltimore, mobilized a citywide coalition that staged rallies, packed public hearings, and collected over 5,000 signatures to save homes from destruction. The group reached an agreement with the city to save 11 historic alley houses on Sarah Ann Street, which will be renovated in partnership with Black Women Build. Journalist Jessel Knorr has been covering the issue and says these initiatives are helping build communities.
Groups like Black Women Build, they train specifically black women. They train them and give them the resources to rehab homes that they can then live in. And it allows them to not only make it livable, but make it part of a thriving community. I think that is the kind of solution that people are looking to expand.
There are 15,000 vacant and deteriorated houses in Baltimore City. City officials have long sought to incentivize the creation of affordable housing by offering tax breaks to the real estate sector. But developers are raking in millions of dollars in credits and subsidies, while loopholes allow them to largely avoid building housing that is affordable for the city's majority working population. Baltimore's Citizens Planning and Housing Association trained tenant organizers to advocate for progressive housing policies. They view the city's tax incentives encouraging gentrification, segregation, and the displacement of marginalized people. Over the past 15 years, developers have built 6,600 luxury apartments, only 37 of which were affordably priced. Nor sees the lack of affordable housing as contributing to other problems.
Over those 15 years, Baltimore continues to have a huge affordable housing crisis, continues to have a homicide crisis, a crime crisis, and all these things that our society likes to pretend are not connected. I think this is evidence that they are connected.
Advocates are also working to end the city's practice of tax sales. If a property owner falls behind on their taxes, the city auctions off the right to collect that debt for pennies on the dollar to debt collectors. In 2020, over 1,000 residents lost their homes for what can amount to a few hundred dollars in unpaid property taxes. Advocates see tax sales as exacerbating the cycle of evictions, displacements, and destabilizing neighborhoods. Nor says some grassroots advocates are buying debt at tax sales on behalf of homeowners.
One has bought off the debt of close to 100 homeowners for pennies of the dollar, which allows residents to stay in their homes.
Nor says the city is now reconsidering the practice of tax sales. This story was produced with original reporting from Jessel Knorr for Yes Media. For Maryland News Connection, I'm Brett Pivato.
KBOO News, Dan Raphael loves Portland's water.
floods and landslides all over California, the Great Salt Lake 70% gone, Colorado River lakes and reservoirs at record lows, water taken for granted. People need water but keep breeding. Water can't breed. Towns in many states where the water is unsafe and smelly, but it's what's on the menu. Even if there is water on the moon or Mars, how will we get it here? Meanwhile, a new drought is beginning in Congress. No money for the IRS to audit wealthy cheaters. As money, water to raise the debt ceiling for military spending or tax cuts for the rich will need to be drained from more public fields like education, health care, and social security. Not just starving the people, but denying them vital fluids, a dreamocracy, prohibition on legislative action, the new McCarthyism, blacklisting those who believe in equity and majority rule. I love our Bull Run water here, especially winter crisp right out of the faucet. Who will be coming to take it? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 11, 2023. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dan Raphael. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Catherine Carley, Zan Potter, Nadia Ramlagan, Antonia Gonzalez, and Brett Pivoteau. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 Beach Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. Thank you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
As a mobile app, you can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store, and don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Making contact.
I'm Lucy King, and today's Making Contact.
The more people that you know that they got out of Echo Park, the less people were there to fight for it.
Our friends from the podcast 7 Million bring us part one of Punished and Persecuted for Being Unhoused. It's a story of a community of unhoused people that came together in Echo Park in Los